I'm Holland Roden, and this is not another to do take two. Yeah. Hey, this is Holland Roden, and this is Not Another Teen Wolf podcast.
And welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast number 138. Today we're going to be talking about Teen Wolf season 6, episode 6, Ghosted. As usual, I'm Karen. I'm joined by Natalie. This one's a little bit late, but the holidays kind of kept us from recording, traveling, sicknesses.
I'm dying.
Etc. You're not dying.
Just like Chris Argent. I mean, I'm dying.
We're all dying a little bit.
Oh my god. Very slowly. Yeah. That's true. Wow, Karen.
Yes.
Getting straight in there with the deep realness.
Yes. Yes, I am. Okay, so as usual, if you'd like to contact us, you can hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at NATW Podcast. Our email is natwpodcast@gmail.com and Tumblr, notanotherteamwolfpodcast.com. Leave us some feedback. We haven't been very good at reading them out lately, but we do see them. We do try to reply to them. It's just been crazy so far.
I could gather some.
True.
I will gather some while you carry on.
Okay.
I feel like look it's not that we're bad at reading it out. It's that we're bad at gathering them and putting them in one place.
We have to get back into our routine. It's already been 6 episodes. Why aren't we there yet?
I don't know. I don't know. It's all...
We're procrastinators, that's why.
Gone a bit. But yes, carry on.
Okay, so jumping into our quotes for this episode, would you like to go first?
I suppose. So mine was in Kanan when Scott and Malia were being tortured by the dead ghost boy. Malia says to Scott, "I know you're not going to beat an 8-year-old's ass, but I will," which I appreciated because she has no boundaries of any kind, and I continue to appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. This was almost my quote, I'm not going to lie. I really liked it.
Did you leave it because you thought I'd take it?
I kind of, a little bit.
Maybe we should start guessing each other's quote.
That would be funny.
Like, from now on, like, we each pick the one that we think the other person's going to pick.
Mm-hmm. I bet we'd get it right more often than not.
Yeah, I think we probably wouldn't do too badly, honestly. I do love Maria. Well, I love her so much that I'm currently trying to change my parting to the other side so that I can cut my hair like her because I love it so much. But anyway, carry on.
She does have great hair.
I really like it. Anyway.
You know what? I saw a shirt in the store like a month ago that reminded me of Malia, and I meant to post it on our Instagram, and I haven't yet, but I should. I will. This is my promise to the universe that I will. Okay, anyway, my favorite line came from Theo, of all people, when he tells Liam, I guess I'm back to classic Theo when he doesn't have his other powers. And I don't know, you gotta love to hate Theo, first of all. And I'm really interested to see how he's gonna turn out in this season, if he's gonna continue to be the Theo he was before, classic Theo, or if he's gonna change a bit. But I just thought it was a funny line, delivered well. And we've said it before, we really love Cody Christian, so it's nice to have him back on screen.
I really liked a couple of his lines, actually. I almost had him being, whatever he said to Liam, like, "I'm fine, thanks for asking." Like, just that kind of, you know, whatever that was. I don't know, it's, I really enjoy him, you know, at all times. But by classic Theo, do you think he meant, like, his attitude, or like, oh, the powers, like he no longer has those extra powers?
I really do think he meant the powers, but I kind of do wonder if it's like a double meaning.
Yeah.
That's what we'll have to wait to find out. Well, let's get right into the discussion. I really want to start off with Lydia's dream because I thought this was really interesting. She walks through a mirror and time travels to 1987. And Holland Roden mentioned something about time travel before, but the way that she said it indicated that it wasn't really time travel. And I've been trying to figure out, like, how that worked for a while. So this kind of explains it. Like, it was a dream, but through the dream, she saw real events in the past. And honestly, I'm kind of glad that it wasn't real time travel, because I think that's just a little bit
outside the realm of what this show does.
Yeah, it would have been a little too ridiculous, which is saying something given, you know, some of the things that we've seen on the show. But they did it in a way that I think stays really true to Lydia's powers, because she can see things and she can understand what's happened in the past. But for her to physically time travel just seems too much.
Yeah, I didn't think it was going to be. I thought it was going to be her having, like, a vision of someone else through, you know, banshee powers, like, you know, or connecting to another banshee, like, through time, and that's exactly what it was. So, didn't think it could be a literal time travel, and I feel like that the use of the word time travel is not the right, like, I would have said a glimpse of the past or something, like, you know, I wouldn't have said the words time travel, so.
Yeah. But for once, I feel like Lydia's visions or her dreams are finally useful. Like before, I mean, not that they weren't useful before, but they came in such glimpses and he had to interpret them. And this was like a whole sequence. She goes to the town of Canaan and it's during a block party in 1987. And we see the Ghost Riders as they take everyone from the town except for one woman. And as far as Lydia's, like, dreams go, this one was fairly straightforward, which I actually really appreciated. So basically what happens is after this dream, they look up Canaan, and I've started calling them the senior pack and the junior pack. The senior pack, which is Scott, Lydia, and Malia, go visit Canaan. And they see this ghost town, and something kind of cool but also kind of worrying happens. Apparently energy left over from what happened with the Ghost Riders causes them to have hallucinations. And this was really disturbing at first because we didn't know what was going on. And Malia sees her dead adopted sister and mother on the ground, bloody. And it was the look on her face, coupled with the fact that, like, these dead bodies are just laying here, like, destroyed me.
Yeah, I was really surprised by this, very confused. I was kind of like, why is this a thing that they're doing? I assume it's not just some random indulgence. Like, there has to be a reason for this residue to be taking place for the rest of the narrative. But, yeah, I wasn't really sure what to make of it. And with her face, for me, it was more like when she got up and, like, shook it off afterwards, the, like, kind of way that she was then was really a lot.
Yeah. I wonder, I like the way that you said you were wondering if it was some sort of indulgence or not, because I was wondering if it's a clue or something that, like, could happen in the future, because we do see Theo shoot Malia. Obviously, we know, like, Theo comes back. He already shot her once, so that could be kind of a leftover, like, memory. But then she's pulled underground by her family, and, like, is Malia gonna die?
Is this, like, a sign of what could happen to any of them, or is it just kind of, like, whatever haunts them? Because Melissa, you know, what Scott ends up saying is Melissa with the hole bitten in the back of her head. Is that meant to be significant to the, you know, the current plot with the hole biting head guy? So, or is it just like, oh, these are our random fears, or are they predictions?
That's exactly what I'm asking, because it definitely could be random fears. I mean, both are related to what's going on in the story right now, or related to that character's past. But at the same time, like, what if it is a prediction?
But that would be not good.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or could it be something to make you kind of I don't know, is it like a warding off, like something to scare you away, or could it be like, I don't understand how or why literal predictions would start coming into this, like, if you know what I mean.
True. And if it's just energy left over from what happened, then it could just be random. Like, I don't think leftover energy would have a purpose. I think it would just be there.
Yeah, that's true.
Crossing our fingers, not a prediction.
Hmm.
But while they're in town, they see this kid on the sidewalk and they follow him home. And it turns out that his mother, his name is Caleb, his mother's name is Lenore. I'm pretty sure it was Lenore.
Yeah.
They go back to their house, and the mother is the woman from Lydia's dream and slash vision. And we find out that she was never taken because she is also a banshee. And I kind of got the feeling from the beginning, given the way that she reacted, and she does scream like this was the case, but like, very interesting that the Ghost Riders won't take a banshee.
Do you think it's because they can't? Or, like, is it detrimental? Or could a banshee, if they take a banshee, could a banshee get back out from where they take them? Or do you think it's just that they just can't affect the supernatural? I mean, they affected Peter, like he was a werewolf and stuff like that. So I suppose they can take your standard supernatural guy, but I don't know. What do you reckon?
It must be something specific with the banshee, not just the fact that she is supernatural. So I'm wondering if her powers allow her to sort of like shake the foundation of what the Ghost Riders are building, or if it's something to do with her mythology and their mythology, and perhaps like it's just can't cross the streams kind of thing. Like, those two things don't mix, so the Ghost Riders kind of leave them alone.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's like, literally, it just doesn't work on them. It's kind of like a magnet would pick up iron filings, but it would leave behind a piece of plastic, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, and maybe they're the pieces of plastic, if that makes sense.
Poor Lydia.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I remember from one of the trailers, I think that somebody said the Ghost Rider was afraid of Lydia. So that would be interesting if the reason why they don't take banshees is because the banshees are dangerous for some reason. Like, they can affect the Ghost Riders. Like, maybe that is the cure, quote unquote, for whatever is going on, which kind of feeds into Caleb's story, because we find out that Lenore's son drowned when he was little, like totally unrelated to anything that had to do with the Ghost Riders.
Yeah, this but was the Ghost weirdest Riders thing brought about the episode to me, but let's
continue. Yeah, I thought it was really interesting though. The Ghost Riders brought him back, but I wonder why. It didn't sound like Lenore like specifically asked for this, because I don't think she necessarily knew what was going on with everything, and maybe it's just because she kind of went crazy later on in life, but I assume that they kind of did this as like a gift or something. Like, maybe they brought him back so she wouldn't attack them, so she would be compliant to whatever they were doing. I'm not sure.
I don't understand how they could do that. Is it meant to be like what they did with Claudia? Like, or is it meant to be, I thought maybe that she'd done it herself as a banshee, that she'd like raised his spirit, but didn't really know that she'd done it. I know she brought him, but I didn't, that did not make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Ghost Riders deal in souls. So it makes sense that they would be able to bring somebody back from the dead. I don't know why they would do that, like to what end, other than the fact that maybe they fear banshees and this was a way to, you know, keep her on their side or keep her out of the way. I absolutely assume that this is what they're doing with Claudia, because it's the only explanation we've gotten so far as to why Claudia is back. So, you know, she doesn't have... it's not like she was killed violently like Caleb was. Like, you kind of see pretty early on how he was killed and how that sort of manifests. Claudia died of an internal brain injury or disease, so, like, that's not going to show on the outside. So we've gotten no clue so far that she's been resurrected, but I absolutely assume that this is what's going on.
I mean, but that kid was like a ghost with powers, weird stuff, and he faded in and out and got all wet. Like, but she, and she doesn't, does she have that up her sleeve? Like, you know, or...
I'm wondering if she does, and she's, like, keeping it on the down low so nobody gets suspicious.
It could be. There's a interesting bit of feedback that we'll get to at the end that I've found in regards to Claudia and the what she might be. So, which is very different from this concept, but I don't know. This is killing me.
Yeah, and especially because we don't know why.
I just hate her so much. I just hate her so much, Karen, and I just need it to stop.
Yeah. The thing that bothers me most of all is we don't know why she's back, and if bringing Caleb back had something to do with Lenore being a banshee, why wouldn't they bring Lydia's grandmother back? You know, like... this has nothing to do with Lydia, so there must be another purpose for Claudia being back. I still think it's to distract them, to be a plant, you know, to keep them away from discovering what's really going on.
I mean, it was brought up this week with her, getting a bit off track, but brought up this week that, you know, that, oh, someone should do a paper about the fact that you survived your... fatal brain disease, and she's like, no, shucks, you know, and so I feel like that was very much there on purpose to be like, hey, dead person, it's probably a thing, but.
Yeah, that was definitely there as a parallel, which I think was really clever, you know, for the people that might not have picked up on it, it was a good little, like, throwback as a reminder. So, I don't know. Again, just have to wait and see. This plot is unfurling very slowly, which I actually appreciate. I feel like they're doing it very well, and I feel like they're pacing it so that each week we get another clue, but we don't get the whole story yet, and I think that makes it even more interesting.
Yeah, so I don't know, Caleb being brought back by the Ghost Riders, I don't know, either it was badly explained or there's more to it, because I didn't feel like that was true. Like, I felt like that was just either shoved in there, like, as a, oh, why is there a ghost? Because we haven't really seen that many ghosty type things before. It's either in there as a, you know, a clue for, oh, they can bring people back and, you know, slot them into reality in the same way that they take people away, which is what we think they've done with Claudia. But that kid is so much more than that. He is kind of a weird ghost, and he's, you know, a phantom, and he has all these strange powers. So... either that's what's going on with Claudia, or Ghost Riser didn't actually have anything to do with him, and she brought back his spirit because she's a banshee, but I don't know if they can do that. It felt quite unclear, but at the moment I've got to go with the clue for Claudia. Like, I feel like that's the best explanation, but it didn't feel that clear, honestly.
Yeah. And speaking of the Ghost Riders, we also learned this episode that they're stuck in Beacon Hills. Theories? Do you have any idea why they would be stuck?
No, not at all. I thought, you know, I mean, they're still taking people and stuff. Like, maybe something protective about the town, ley lines, Nemeton, etc. Like, maybe it's going to tie back into something about Beacon Hills as, like, kind of natural... place in the order of things, that it's not just a normal town. That would be my only first and only theory. How about you?
That's good. I really like that, actually. My assumption was that it had to do with a person, like maybe they couldn't leave until they got Scott or something like that. But I like the idea that the town maybe trapped them, because we know that it's sort of this black hole for supernatural creatures, and if it just keeps pulling them in and in, maybe, you know, they can't escape.
I don't know.
So that makes the most sense to me now that you've mentioned it.
Yeah, but it could even be a positive thing. Like, it could even be a positive force, you know, like being like, no, you can't keep doing your thing. We've got the powers here to stop you, so you're stuck here till we beat you, and then you don't get to go on and harm anyone else.
Yeah.
Like, if that's
which we also learned kind of this. Thing. Yeah, and we also learned this episode that the Ghost Riders are very, very old. Nishiko said that they had been, you know, around well before she ever was. So maybe it is sort of time for their reign to end, which could be really cool, actually.
Yeah, I do not know.
So Lydia says they can't send them on their way until they save Styles, though. She doesn't want to be left behind like Lenore. And I love this because it's still bringing Styles into the fold. It's still a focus. And I like that Lydia is worried about this, which is kind of weird to say, but I don't know. I feel really bad for her. She has all this power. She's the one person the Ghost Riders can't touch. She's so afraid that all of her friends are going to disappear. And she knows that there's this person out there that she loves and who has been taken. She must be so confused, so sad right now. And yet, like, she's not going to give up. And I just think that they've really highlighted her character this season so far, even in 6 episodes, and they've really made her a force to be reckoned with. I mean, she kind of always has been because of her intelligence, but she's just so determined to save Styles, even when Malia and Scott are like, yeah, but like, we have some other things to deal with too. And I just appreciate, you know, everything that we've seen of her so far in season 6.
It kind of feels like she's the lead character of the show right now.
It really does, especially because Scott has sort of been in the background a little bit lately.
Yeah, he definitely has. And he's not been kind of the instigator of ideas. The focus hasn't been on his trauma. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of not been Scott's show for a little while, for this season at least.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a good thing, or, like, you know.
I think it's a good thing. Scott has had a ton of time to shine, and not that I don't think he doesn't still deserve that time to shine, but there have been moments where, especially for Lydia, when we were trying to figure out her banshee powers, where, you know, we'd go the whole episode and then in the last 5 minutes, something with Lydia would happen. Next week, whole episode, tons of stuff would go down. Lydia would come in the last 5 minutes and solve a clue. And then we'd have to wait until next week to see how that turned out. And I think at the time, like, that was necessary for the way that the plot was working, but as a fan of Lydia, got a little frustrating, and now she's very much at the forefront. She's solving these clues, and we're seeing her throughout the entire episode, and we're seeing her emotional turmoil as she goes through all of this. And it's just, considering Holland is, like, killing it right now, too, like, I just really appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, yeah, it doesn't feel, like, wrong or anything, but It's just quite curious to me, like, when Scott will kind of, I don't know, kick it up a notch, I guess. Like, when the urgency for him will come in.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that kind of wraps up, like, the Ghost Rider, the main part about the Ghost Rider in this episode. But we've got some other things going on. We switch back and forth over to Melissa and Chris at the hospital. Chris has been hit with the Ghost Rider's whips, and he is infected with a supernatural toxin. And if they try to cut it out, it's just going to spread and he's going to die. And nobody's going to be happy if that happens.
I don't know. Someone might. But not so, someone out there.
True.
Might be.
True.
I don't know.
Probably. There's probably some crusaders, but I don't understand. Just look at the beard, guys. Just look at the beard. He knows the cure to this. It's like a list of 9 ingredients that Melissa has to put together, but he only knows them in Gaelic. He only knows the Gaelic names. And she has to mix them exactly right, or he will die.
This is the most convoluted, weirdest plot ever, but I really loved it.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm trying to figure out, like, what was the point of this? Like, is it just to show their bonding? Because, like, lots of hand-holding still. Was it to, I don't know, fill up time?
I feel like
I'm not really sure.
I feel like it was they needed to address his problem that he was left in the hospital with, and they needed to stretch it over the course of the episode in small increments. And this was the best idea they had for that. And I mean, it makes sense if he knows about like supernatural toxins. I mean, he doesn't know specifically what it is, but he's like, I kind of know a fix-all for supernatural toxins, but I only know it in Gaelic. Whatever. I feel like it's sort of, I don't know, it kind of makes sense. I'm not sure why they haven't used this before for other supernatural things, but I feel like that they wanted to stretch his issues, is he going to be okay or not, you know, for the episode, and not just be like, oh, we're just getting you out of here, and I don't know, they had to figure out a cure for it and get him better and make it last the length of the episode.
And I will say that I really enjoyed seeing Melissa, like, I mean, not that she's never taken charge before, because obviously we've seen her prowess as a nurse, but, like, it was just really cool for her to be like, okay, I kind of have no idea what I'm doing, but let's try this anyway, and she's really good at what she does.
Yeah, she was awesome. I love them.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I was talking to our friend Mai, and she brought up an excellent point. She goes, where's Deaton? Wouldn't Deaton know exactly how to do all of this?
Deaton doesn't give a fuck about helping them. He only gives, like, Deaton's motivations, I don't know, maybe he's off in the forest activating the Nematon to keep the, you know, to keep the Ghost Riders there because he wants Scott to kill them all. You know, I don't know, that's probably giving him more credit that he deserves. Deaton is conveniently absent, and maybe in this universe he doesn't exist. Maybe he's been taken and we've forgotten about him and we'll just let him stay there. Mm-hmm. Like, you know.
He's the one person that's left behind. Mm. They save Peter, but they don't save Deaton.
I would take Peter over Deaton every day of the week. Sorry.
I think I would too.
I just want him to be, I just feel like that he's so, maybe it's just the delivery of the lines, but everything he says, oh my god, just comes across so shady, like, and smarmy, and like that there's something really dodgy about, like, he's not earnest, if that makes sense. Like, there's nothing about him that I feel like is like he's earnestly trying to be emotional. You've never really seen him be like emotional about the prospect of like Scott getting hurt or anything. I feel like he's like a bit of a Dumbledore in the fact that Dumbledore is like really twisted, horrible man, like, you know, doing the, you know, stuck in this situation where he has to, like, make a child die to save the world. And he's not evil, but he's kind of awful. And he kind of, like, the world thinks he's not awful, but he is. Like, he's kind of making these really terrible choices. But I don't know if Deaton is, like, that, or if he's actually evil, or what the hell's going on. Is he just bitter about Talia Hale? Maybe he's stalking Derek or something. Like, the most interesting thing about him to me has ever been that he was in love with Talia. And they didn't even make that a full thing. So, I don't know. Yes, he certainly would have or should have known this, and would have or should have known this from the past about other supernatural toxins, like when Derek got shot with the magic bullet. But no, we just had to cut his arm off instead. look, sorry, you've derailed me now. You shouldn't have brought him up.
Uh-oh, so sorry.
It's just,
blame my.
I guess it's just, you know, he wasn't there for that episode or whatever, so Melissa had to do it. And also, we want to show how in love Melissa and Chris are, apparently.
But yeah, I mean, Melissa, Chris, like, I mean, how many more times can they zoom up on their hands?
Grasping like, each other.
Yeah, holding each other, you know, not wanting her to walk away, her caring for him. I mean, it's so there, and I'm still trying to figure out why and what the point is and what this means for Sheriff and Melissa, and especially, like, I assume once Claudia goes away. I don't know, but I'm not saying I don't like it, so, and we all know how Natalie feels.
I'm okay with it, in this universe where, as we said, that this has come to pass because the dynamics between the different characters are really different to one another. Like, the sheriff and, Melissa have never really had a chance to get to know each other. Styles never existed. It wasn't like they were, like, parents, like, you know, looking after each other's kids. You know, she probably would have been close to, Chris after Allison died if Scott really dated Allison and all of that kind of thing. Like, I feel like her and Sheriff were never a go, like, in this universe. And even in the real universe, like, I think they have a really nice long-term friendship and stuff. But this is there, sizzling under the surface with Chris waiting to come out. Then, I don't know, there might have to be a bit of a fight or something. Not a fight. I don't think they should fight. They both have too many guns. I think they should not fight. But
True. Although, I think Argent would win.
Between Sheriff and Chris.
He has a lot of guns.
That's true. I don't think he would shoot someone over a girl. I would hope.
Don't think so either.
Anyway, carry on.
Last major point of this episode was the B plot with Liam and Hayden. And first of all, no Mason or Corey this episode, which was a little sad, but I think kind of necessary. Too many factors, like they weren't really needed, but it was I miss Mason.
Yeah.
And my new fave, Corey. He's not dear. My new fave. But I do like him.
I'm
so.
Still a bit I'm not that on board, but you know, we'll see.
Yeah. So they team up with Mr. Douglas, Nazi werewolf what? Guy, of yeah. all people so this episode. Random. It is random, but, like, it's so calculated, though, because he hears them talking about the Ghost Riders in the hallway, and then he lets them find him in the basement. Like, he what? So sets it up. Yeah. Like, it was so obvious to us, the audience, whereas, like, Liam and Hayden are like, oh, like, what are you doing? Or like, oh, you know, we're on the same page. We believe you. Let us help you. And he's like, yeah, totally.
What the hell is going on there?
He says he wants to stop the Ghost Riders, too. He wants to build something to absorb the lightning strike, and however this happens, they'll be able to, I guess, stop the Ghost Riders from escaping back again or something like that. However, he is going to use this. I'm not even going to say probably. He is going to use this to his own end because he's obsessed with electricity and the power that it brings him.
Yeah.
He wants more power. That's the only thing I can think of.
What kind of power? Emotional power? Physical power? What can the electricity do? Is he, like, addicted to it? Is he, like, a heroin addict trying to get a fix because the dread doctors had him in a box and, like, zapped him and now he doesn't have his lifeline? Like, what's...
Maybe. I definitely think it's physical power. I think that maybe he's found a way to harness electricity in a way that doesn't harm him but actually bolsters his power.
I don't know. I don't know why the hell he thinks that this is, like, a thing that can... could happen, if you know what I mean. Like, I don't know why... what he's trying to achieve here. Like, is he actually evil? You know, he's a Nazi and a werewolf, so maybe, but we haven't got any of the Nazi backstory yet. I don't know if this is gonna, like, stretch out for, like, you know, a long time. This, you know, he's gonna become, like, a fully, like, a full, quote-unquote, human ally of the pack, and then it's going to be like, ha-ha, Nazi werewolf, or what? Like, has Scott even met him? Can Scott, like, smell when someone else is a werewolf or whatever?
Scott's met him. They've definitely interacted.
And Liam should be able to Is this not something you can tell about someone when you meet them if you're a werewolf?
Well, remember, really powerful alphas in particular can hide their scent.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I guess.
He must be able to do that.
Yeah.
I guess. Convenient.
Fine. Canon has a preceding answer for me. I'll accept that.
Hold on. This kind of does, it was, it's just, you're cute. I like you. this kind of does feed into the other half of this story, though, because Liam has a terrible idea.
Holy shit. Holy crap. Of all the ways that, like, I thought he was going to come back, this was not it, can I just say?
Yeah. So Liam convinces Nachiko to turn over Kira's sword.
Did we know that this was going to happen, by the way? Did we know that she was in this episode before now?
No.
Because I did not.
No, I had no idea.
And I was like, whoa!
Yeah.
This was the highlight, like, number one. If I had to, like, be like, number one moment of the episode, it was the reveal of her. I was just like, yay! But I was going to go back and check if her name was in the opening credits, if I just missed it. Because sometimes when they have, like, surprise appearances, I don't know if I've noticed it in this show, but, like, other shows, Buffy, Supernatural, like, tons and tons of shows, nearly all drama shows, when they have a surprise entrance, sometimes they don't put that person's name in the opening credits. They only have them at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't go and check if her name was in the opening credits, but maybe it was, and I was just, like, vaguing out. But, yeah, I was very thrilled. Very thrilled.
So was I. I really, for one, I really like seeing her just because I love the actress and I love Mrs. Yukimura. I think she's a really strong character, very interesting, adds a whole nother dynamic to the show given what she is. But also reminder, like, Kira's not dead. She's not gone. It's not taboo to mention her name. You know, she's just off getting fixed or whatever. So, like, that's cool. And I love, like, Nachiko was like, this probably isn't a good idea, but, you know, Kira would do it, which, like, I don't know if that's the highest praise. Like, they don't always have the best ideas. So, like, Kira wanting to do it might not mean the best thing, but she's like, Kira would want to do it. Here you go. Gives him the sword. And they bring back Theo because they think he still has Josh's power to absorb electricity. Except they get classic Theo, so joke's on them. Theo's basically useless at this point. And
why does Liam Theo keep being doing Theo, such terrible things? Like, why does Liam just constantly... He's not showing that he should be left in charge, you know, when Scott goes.
Yeah. Although I will say I really appreciated that. I think it was Hayden who was like, if you do this, this is your responsibility. And I'm hoping that Liam really, like, steps up and claims the responsibility because, yeah, he took a risk in bringing Theo back and it didn't pan out the way he wanted to. But, like, you kind of have to make those decisions as a leader, even if they don't work out the way you intend them to. It's important to take action. And I think that's a thing Liam was hesitant about earlier in the season when he didn't want to step up and be lacrosse captain. Like, sometimes you just gotta do it, even if you're wrong. And it turns out he was wrong here, but Theo being Theo, He is so slick, and he can talk his way out of anything or into anything. And even though Liam's like, yeah, I'm sending you right back to hell, he's like, wait a second, but I can be useful. He remembers, he knows a lot about the Ghost Riders and the Dread Doctors and, you know, all of that. He also remembers Styles, so that's going to be a huge help. And he definitely knows who Mr. Douglas is. He doesn't say anything, but he knows who he is.
Theo.
Theo, yeah.
You think
the way that they were looking at each other? Oh, definitely. The way that they were looking at each other? Yeah, yeah. So, I'm wondering how long it takes him. Yes. I'm wondering how long it'll take Theo to reveal that information to the team or if he's going to play it close to the chest. Which is kind of something I'm wondering about Theo in general right now. Like, is he going to help them, first of all? If he is it only because he doesn't want to die, or is he trying to turn over a new leaf? And if he doesn't help them, is he going to help the Nazi werewolf? Is he only going to help himself?
I don't think he's going to help them.
I mean,
I don't know. Maybe they're both like, we were oppressed by the Dread Doctors together and be best friends or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So how do you feel about Theo coming back?
Good. I feel good about it. I want all of the sassy, terrible, evil people to come back and be, like, good friends with the pack. Like, you know, we kind of have had it with Deucalion. I would like that with
God,
Peter.
God, I miss him.
Oh, he's good. And I would like it with Peter and Theo as well. Some of the people can stay evil. But Theo and Peter, I think, both are like, well, I made some mistakes and now I'm going to not be evil.
Yeah.
So I would like that for both of them.
Oh my God.
Mainly because I love
Kirby. Theo and Peter. Theo and Peter need to just be like BFFs.
Oh, I don't
And know be like, that. Yeah, dude.
Like,
I know how you feel.
Remember when we were evil and now we're stuck helping this guy, but he's just, he gives you, you know, the puppy dog eyes and you just can't not help him, like, or something like that. Yeah.
Well, I can tell you two people who are not happy Theo's back, Scott and Malia. Scott's like, I could literally tear you in half right now. And Malia's like, I'm literally going to do that.
Yeah.
I think it takes, like, everything inside both of them not to just attack him.
Yeah, I really do think that I just don't understand how they're going to react to Liam for doing this as well. Like, how just over and over again these things that Liam's doing, and Scott's like, wow, these are the choices you're making? But perhaps he handles it better than we think he's going to, and it's like, oh, that was the right decision after all, but I don't know.
Well, I really hope that Liam can defend himself. I really hope that he can stand there and be like, look, this is the decision I made because I thought it was the right one. You know, Theo is an excellent ally to have. The problem is trusting him. He is strong and he is smart. He knows a lot about what they're dealing with. If they could just make sure he's definitely on their side, it's an excellent decision, but that's where you run into the murky area. So I hope Liam can be like, look, I made this decision. Maybe it'll bite us in the ass, but you know what? It was a risk that I had to take.
We'll just kill him again if he's, you know, doesn't behave.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep that sword around and nothing to worry about. Yeah. So the last bit of this episode was the sheriff peeling back the wallpaper in his house. I still think that Stiles' room is behind there. But again, I was talking to Mai and she said maybe it's Stiles' height chart and this could possibly be a name reveal, which I thought was also an excellent theory.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. I found it a bit weird, the cinematography of, like, it looked like he was looking through a window because he was peeling all the wallpaper and we could see him, as opposed to, like, going from the side and looking at him staring at whatever it was.
Yeah. I was trying to decide if he actually was looking through a window, like maybe a window to his door. Like, sometimes, I mean, it's weird to have it on a bedroom door, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a thing. Or if it was just to, like, show his face as he's looking at whatever he's looking at.
I feel like, I feel like there's a scene in the trailer, one of the trailers, where Lydia's, like, sitting on the floor crying and being like,
yes,
you know, with Sheriff and being like, you know, why does it matter so much that you remember him, you know, I remember him because you loved him. I feel like that was taking place in the floor of, like, an empty, deserted room that I assumed was Stiles' room, so it could be that.
That's why I've been so adamant that, like, this must be Stiles' room.
Yeah.
Okay, let's jump into feedback. We have quite a bit. We did our gathering.
Yeah, I've basically Natalie did just the gathering. Gathered, and so...
Okay.
So yeah, we got a lot of feedback. I wanted to knock out, like, some of the old Tumblr asks so that I can send a message on Tumblr being like, we talked about this on the podcast, And then sort of clear that out and go from there, because there were a few being held up. But there were a few tweets. I don't know if you want to group these together by theme. Like, some of them are about Claudia and some of them are about, you know, different things. The first one, Laura Morrow, at Laura Morrow 123, says, I'm looking forward to your thoughts about what Lydia learned about the Ghost Riders, especially the car scene. What car scene?
That is an excellent question.
I'm not sure what bit they mean.
Yeah, and this was recent.
This is about this episode, or are we talking about, like, flashing back to, you know, the car scene? I really don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. I don't know. In terms of what she learnt about the Ghost Riders, the fact that they're stuck and the fact that they have these other symptoms, I guess, like the hallucinations, and the fact that they can do this, you know, that they can sort of leave her stranded, is all very interesting and all different motivators. Did any of them actually discuss, like, the hallucinations? Did they actually discuss, hey, this is what's happening to us? Because, you know, Scott and Malia both had those incidents, and sort of Lydia was like, she's not real, your mum's not here. Did any of them actually talk about, hey, what's with those hallucinations? Like, anyone?
Lydia mentioned the energy thing, but other than that, like, it didn't really go any further.
Hmm. Okay. And then Blue Fleur, so B-L-E-U-F-L-E-U-R-E, so it's Blue Flower in French, said to us, could Josh have been part Ghost Rider? Also, wouldn't be surprised if the Ghost Riders are stuck because of something the Dread Doctors did. That could definitely be something that would bring Tank Wolf into it, being like, oh, shit, we did screwed this up, and now those guys are stuck here, and I don't want them near me, so I'm going to try and fix this. And that's why he's, like, you know, allying with the pack. I don't know about Josh being past Ghost Rider. Whatever he was very weird. But
yeah, I just looked him up because I was trying to get them all straight in my head, and I guess he is an unknown hybrid, and he definitely dealt with electricity, so, like, that's very interesting. I don't know if that's something that you can splice the same way that you can splice, like, a werewolf or a coyote or anything like that, but still an interesting theory and definitely, like, plausible.
Yeah, I
like the idea that maybe the Ghost Riders are stuck because of the Dread Doctors, especially because the Dread Doctors also dealt in electricity and experimentation, and they sort of cheated death in a way. Not that the Ghost Riders are necessarily death incarnate or anything like that, but, you know, it's related. If they're reaping souls and the Dread Doctors kept them from reaping souls, perhaps they followed them to Beacon Hills.
And then I'll just do this one next, because it's sort of slightly related. X Morales, who's I Love 3BRC, says, I'm confused. I thought Creepy Teacher was a bad guy. So are we all, X Morales. So are we all. And this is tying into this whole Dread Doctor thing. Like, was he an ally? Was he actually an willing ally of the Dread Doctors? Or was he a, you know, a prisoner of them? Is he trying to undo what they did? Or is he trying to carry on their work?
I mean, he's definitely a bad guy. But he's being very manipulative right now. And he's using the pack to help him to his own end, I believe. So he might be okay right now, but it's going to lead to some bad times later.
Yes, agreed.
Nina at NNYR524 says, I'm happy Kira was mentioned. Feels a bit like she still exists, unlike when Isaac and Derek left. Yes, completely agree. Definitely feel the same way. She also says, I wonder why the sheriff is so resistant. Does he just not want to admit he could forget someone so important? Or is it Claudia? Yeah, I mean, and I think we've seen before that the sheriff is kind of resistant to the whole supernatural thing. Like, it kind of gets to be a bit too much. And when you're convinced that your life is correct and somebody tells you, no, you have a son, like, he probably would feel awful if he forgot that he had a son, so I'm really not surprised that he's resistant.
He's so really angry about it all of the time. And I really don't know why. Like, why he's so extremely angry about it. But, I don't know, Claudia, maybe it's like the threat of, like, well, what was my life meant to be? Or maybe it's just, like, beyond his realm of belief. I don't know. Is this real? Is this a real picture or is this a manip? I'm just on Tumblr getting the feedback, and I've just seen a picture of it looks like a still of Liam and Hayden kissing while Liam is holding, like, a leash, like, that Theo is chained to. This is not a drawing. This is a photograph, but it could be a manipulated photograph. He is holding, like, Theo on a chain. Like, his wrist is chained, and he basically has to drag him around everywhere because it's his responsibility. I don't know if this is a manip or if this is actually a still from the next episode, but we'll see. I really don't know. No, there are several stills from the episodes coming up where basically, yeah, Theo has to get taken around by Liam on a leash. So I will send them to you right now because this is hilarious. So that's going to be a way of handling it, I suppose, as we were talking about, you know, like, how is he going to handle his, how is Liam going to be held responsible for what he did? Apparently this is how he gets to, because I was literally going to say as a joke, oh, is he going to have to, like, look after Theo in his house, like, have him, you know, like, is it going to be like, you know, when in Buffy, like, they keep Spike tied up in the basement, you know, like, and they all have to take turns minding him and stuff like that? No, it turns out it literally is going to be like that, where they just have to keep him on a chain.
The caption for this, though, poor Theo, first chained with Layden, and now he has to watch them kiss. This is more of hell than actual hell. That's so sad.
Yeah, I really don't know. How this is gonna play out again, unless this is really intense Photoshop work, but they do look like filming pictures, and I don't know how they would have created these, you know, from nothing. But yeah, that's hilarious to me. So anyway, we'll move on to some more Tumblr asks that we got. Another one, an anonymous Tumblr says, why do you think Sheriff was immediately triggered upon Scott mentioning Peter? He seemed to know exactly who Peter was. How can he forget his own son but remember Peter Hale, of all people? My guess is because Peter returned, people are remembering him now. Still, I wonder if what Sheriff's connection to Peter is, because without Stiles, Sheriff isn't as close to Scott and Melissa, hence Sheriff's connection / link to the supernatural. By extension, Peter Hale wouldn't even exist. Okay, firstly, we do know Sheriff is in on the supernatural with Scott. Somehow, even without Scott Stiles, he has become aware, like, you know, through the whatever's happened there for the last 3 years, that this is going on. Like, he knows that Scott is a werewolf, and he knows that all of these things happened with the Hales. But I would love if it's just, like, regardless of werewolfness, like, Peter Hale is, like, the town's, like, sleazy, dodgy uncle that no one trusts. I don't know, it could be that he knows about all his crimes from the past, or it could be that, you know, he's just kind of a dodgy, random, you know, guy that everyone's like, ugh, that guy, get him out of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll do that one at the end. Do you want to read the next question?
Another anonymous Tumblr says, do you think it's possible that the Nazi Alpha is somehow controlling the Ghost Riders or connected to them? Because the Wild Hunt arrived around the same time as the Dread Doctors and their tank guy. Obviously, there must have been something very special about that particular werewolf that the Doctors captured him and kept him around for decades as their source of their youth elixir. Also, Valak mentioned that the Doctors had been around before. Maybe that's why/when Kanan was erased or deserted. I'm not entirely sure that the Dread Doctors are connected to the Ghost Riders, like, throughout history, but I do think that it's very interesting that they're kind of showing up around the same time. I do think that they're connected. I believe that maybe it does have something to do with Mr. Douglas, because you're right, like, something was very special about him. We know that he was very powerful slash is very powerful, so perhaps the Ghost Riders really are there for him.
I don't know. That's, if he's the one, like, stopping them or keeping them there or something like that. There's definitely, oh, speaking about Kanan being erased and deserted, there was another message a little while ago talking about the various, ghost towns, like, just, this was an older message, basically saying, in the new teaser featuring Styles and Peter, take a look at timetable, under arrived, some of the cities listed are ghost towns, like Bodhi, ancient sites like Harappa, and regions where great disaster has happened, like Pripyat. So the Ghost Riders must have been there before, likely causing events in these areas. In that context, are they erasing not just people but entire cities? Does this mean the town's under delayed, or where they'll be heading next, or have these stops been cancelled? So whoever this was, who was on the ball about what was going on in terms of the ghost towns, and all of the deserted places, and you know, noticed that before Kanan started becoming a thing. But the question is why or how they pick the various places, and Valak mentioning the doctors being around before is like, oh my god, it's so, that is like one of the most annoying things about this show to me, that we did not find out what the hell, like, that there wasn't like a flashback to what happened in the previous time and how it was affected, like, given that he wrote that book, and like, you know, is this something that the whole town has forgotten about, or was he in one of the other towns where it happened, yeah, like, or something like that, like, is it a cause and effect, the Dread Doctors come and then the Ghost Riders come clean up, or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
The next one here says, hey, ladies, I'm totally with you on Claudia Stilinski being evil. In fact, I think she's the Sluag, possibly the one from Icon. That was too cool a concept not to use again, and definitely felt like they were setting something up for the future. That's from Jenna on Tumblr. So this was a mythical creature that was... The design of him was done in a contest, like a fan contest to do a creature mm-hmm. design. But the character itself was a real mythological creature called a Sluag, which in this universe, according to Valak, can take on the appearance of the lost souls bound to it, so it can shapeshift, which is very interesting. I don't know if, you know, the reason that when you say that they might have been setting something up for future, I don't know if it was just that they wanted to give that Sluag its moment in the sun, because it was both designed as a fan competition and played by a fan who was on set for a Make-A-Wish Foundation, so they might have just wanted to, like, linger on it to give tribute to both of those things, that, like, that was a guest spot for the fan actor and that it was, like, a competition-winning design. So that could be why they lingered on it, but it's also definitely is a concept that, you know, shape-shifting thing is definitely a very convenient character to have around in the mythology, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that it just was what it was in the moment. I think that it is a really cool concept, and if they decided to revisit that, like, totally down for it, but I don't really feel like they were necessarily setting up something for the future.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I do still think Claudia is evil. Do you want to do next one?
Another anonymous person on Tumblr says, so I just had a quick thought. What if Peter somehow organized the Wild Hunt and is acting as a decoy? I can see the show coming full circle with having him be the big bad or be a part of it. I think he knows something about what the Dread Doctors did to the teacher who is eating souls and somehow wants to obtain that power. Any thoughts on this? I don't necessarily think that Peter's the big bad. I think Nat and I both really want him to be a good guy, although coming full circle is very interesting. However, he kind of already had that with the benefactor plotline, even though, like, he wasn't actually setting it up. Like, it kind of happened as a consequence. So I'm seeing, like, I think that would be a bit repetitive. So I really don't see him as being a decoy.
some people, and this isn't like a criticism, this isn't like, some people think this, but some people really want Peter to be, like, to get his comeuppance. Some people really want this show to end with, like, Lydia killing Peter for what he did to her, or for Scott killing Peter for making him into a werewolf. Like that Peter is unforgivable and unredeemable, and that he will end up really being the evil behind everything. I do not feel that at all, but I'm very curious to, like, what elements make people think that, if you know what I mean. Like, make people convinced that he is, like, the really, like, the real bad guy. Because it's just not how I read what they're doing with the character at all. But then some people just really think it should be like that. I don't know if there are, you know, moments of the things that he's done that they've considered, like, a deal breaker for some people. And I'd be curious to hear for people, like, you know, why they think Peter should be not redeemed versus why he should be redeemed. So if anyone has any strong thoughts on that either way, we can have a little feedback session with a couple of alternate ideas there in the future if anyone is interested. So, yeah, I don't think that he would have the power to organise the Wild Hunt, but as I said, that concept of the show coming full circle and having him be the big bad is something some people really want to happen and want him to be the ultimate bad guy, and I'm not sure why, but it's certainly something that's carried on during the show. A couple of little ones here. Anonymous asked a little while ago, when will the full cast of Teen Wolf go to a convention in Australia? I cannot answer that question. We do in Australia have, we've had a few, like three or four editions of a little local convention called Creatures of the Night, which is a Teen Wolf specific convention. I actually missed the one that happened last year because it was at the same time that I was at Comic-Con. So none of the current cast were there because they were at Comic-Con, but I think Arden, Melissa, and some other actors were there. We've never had, like, a full lineup, like, you know, of every person. I think Tyler Posey was there for the first one. We also have two big convention tours called Supernova and Oz Comic Con, which throughout the year do various locations. You know, they do Sydney, Melbourne, you know, Brisbane, and they do, you know, different guests for each one. So they'll do Sydney and Brisbane will have these guests, and they'll be on, like, alternate weekends. And then, like, 6 months later, they'll Melbourne and Adelaide will have these guests. There's very often a Teen Wolf guest at those cons. Like, we had Tyler Hoechlin at Supernova in June this year, and that was, like, the day that it was announced that he was Superman, so that was quite a big deal. We were the first, like, audience or, like, panel to hear about that, and to get to ask him questions about that. At Oz Comic Con, we had Max and Charlie Carver, who are always really, really great fun at cons, and I spoke to them at that con, like, a little interview, which was on another episode. They know, like, the con companies in Australia do know that Teen Wolf is a very popular show, even though it doesn't really air. Like, it airs on cable here, but, like, it's not a household name, but they know the internet presence, and they know the con culture surrounding Teen Wolf, so there's very often at least one Teen Wolf guest in the big, you know, the big comic cons that we have. So that's fun. I don't know if they're going to do another Creatures of the Night, where it's, like, a full-day convention just for Teen Wolf, but we'll see. There's always tons of merch and stuff at the big cons as well. But yeah, I don't know if they're ever going to do a full cast convention here, like the size of, you know, like BikeCon or like some of the other cons, like Howlicon, that have had, you know, like 10, 15 guests, like big amounts of guests. So yeah, I don't know. That's sorry if you haven't got to go to one yet. I've been to a couple of the Creatures of the Night, but not the most recent one. And then the final comment was just from Fried Wizard Whisperers, who said, Merry Christmas to both of you. I love your podcast and can't wait for the next one, which was so nice, but also makes me feel really guilty that we didn't get to do a Christmas episode, because we have done a few Christmas episodes on live streams. Hashtag never forget Peter, his uncle, who used to be dead. I was traveling, and God, it was so difficult to get my computer to work the computer I was traveling with to work for Skype, even for the episode we had to record while I was away for the last Teen Wolf episode. So I don't know how it would have coped with a live stream. But we are going to do an end of year episode of Not About the Weather, which is our spin-off podcast. It's a general pop culture podcast, not just about Teen Wolf, which we've been running for the past couple of months, in order to have something to keep doing when Teen Wolf ends. So we're going to go on that and talk about like the best and worst things about 2016 in pop culture for us personally. So that'll kind of be like a Christmas episode, kind of. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
We can always do Christmas in July when Teen Wolf is all the way over.
Oh my God. Yeah, suppose we can. yeah. But, yeah, thank you for the wishes and just reaching out to say something nice just for the hell of it. And that person has a very cute supernatural icon of, well, it's not that cute. It's Sam hugging Dean, but it's, like, in a moment when they're dying or something because they look very stressed.
I just like their name, Fried Wizard Whispers.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's about it from us. So what's the next week's episode called, titled? Okay, so the next one is apparently called, next week, 607 is Heartless, and then week after that is called Blitzkrieg. So Blitzkrieg, I'm assuming we're going to start getting into the World War II situation. So this, it's going to be full Nazi then. After that, Heartless could be anything. Do we have anything about hearts being ripped out at the moment?
At the moment, no.
I think they've been, like, MTV's Twitter has been, like, making cracks about Theo being heartless. Like, has he come back from hell without a soul, a la Sam Winchester season 6 or something like that?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Interesting.
I'm just looking forward to him getting towed around on chains. I really hope that's true. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not down with the kids. I can't tell if something's in my nip, but it doesn't look like one.
I don't think it's.
Yeah. So that's.
But good news is, since we're recording this so late, we don't have too much longer to wait until our list. So we'll try to get the next episode out quicker. That we're both home,
we will do so as best as we can. And talk to you very soon. Apologies for this being late. As a reward. Or a thank you, what can we do? Do you have a good photo you can post or something?
I'll post that shirt that reminds me of Malia.
Okay. I feel like that I could probably rustle something up that might be fun. But, all right. Yeah. We shall let you go. Thank you for hanging out with us. Please carry on hanging out with us, and you can check out Not About the Weather, you can check out Karen's recaps from Hyperball for Teen Wolf each week, and yeah, we will see you soon, so bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.
Where's my box of Star Wars tissues gone? Yeah, fun fact. I'm quite sick. And I wanted to get tissues that have the lotion in them, like the aloe vera and vitamin E blend Kleenex, because the like crappy Kleenex at my work were like chafing my nose. And Leo went to the store, and the only Kleenex they had in the aloe vera and vitamin E, the only ones, were these limited edition Star Wars boxes that has, like, original, like, you know, Darth Vader and Luke and Leia on it and stuff. The only ones. And so, like, While I might have bought these by choice if I saw them in the supermarket, we literally had to buy them. And the exact same thing happened at Comic-Con when we were looking for Ziploc bags. Like, we wanted a small packet of Ziploc bags, like less than 50, because they come in like big packets, to take food into Comic-Con. And the only ones they had were left were Star Wars print ones. And I was like, I don't know, is this just because it's Comic-Con? I don't understand. But I kept using them all year at work because I didn't even finish the whole bag of them at Comic-Con. And this girl I worked with kept being like, are those Star Wars Ziploc bags? And I'm like, yes, I'm not a child, but yes, they are. And it was literally the ones we had to buy. Again, I may have bought them for choice for fun, especially at Comic-Con, but I keep getting left with Star Wars products in the store when it's actually I just want a normal product. But anyway, the tissue boxes are quite extreme, honestly. They're like oil painting versions of all the characters, and it's like awful. Oh my God. Yeah, it's... Anyway, I don't know. Carry on.